And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to part two of this episode of Steelers Friday Night Six Pack. I'm your host, Tony Defeo. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for sticking with me on in Facebook and on YouTube Live. And thank you for downloading part two. I have some more things I wanted to get off my chest, so to speak, and take some questions and comments. And did I say Steelers brunch, George Teston? I might have said that. It's all right. It's Friday night. You know what I mean. It's all the same. But if I said that, obviously it's not brunch. It's 9 o'clock at night or 9:30 as I'm talking to you right now. Boy, you guys never miss anything. Anyway, let's see what we have here as far as comments and questions before I move on to my next topic. And this is one from Thanks Mean Joe, and he asks, who do you like as a starting running back today, Tony? You mean for the Steelers? To be honest, I'm okay with all three of the guys that are the top prospects. Najee Harris from Alabama, Travis Etienne from Clemson, and Javonte Williams from North Carolina. I'd be perfectly fine with any one of those guys. They're all great prospects. It really isn't a whole lot that differentiates any of them, as far as I'm concerned. They all play for major programs. Obviously, Alabama and Clemson have been far more successful than North Carolina, but it doesn't really matter. It's still a high level college football in the ACC, North Carolina. So I'm not worried about that. So I really don't have a preference. I think it'll be interesting to see if one of those guys is there and he's the only one left. What do they do? Do they take him? Or do they hope that he'll still be there in the second round, which he probably won't be? Or do they have their eye on another running back that they feel like they can get in the second or third round? So, and that brings me into some draft talk in the second half of the show. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with this draft series on, it's an NFL film / NFL Network production, and it's called Caught in the Draft, and it chronicles some famous previous drafts. I think I've seen 7 so far, 74, 75, 85, 94, 95, 04, and 05. I've watched all of them, and I think they're all fantastic, and they're all enlightening. And I think the 74 one I just found on YouTube last night, Thursday night. And it was basically the main theme of that production, as far as I'm concerned, was I shouldn't say the main theme, but the thing I took away from that was how very little teams value draft picks in those days. It's certainly not like they do today. Teams were just, half the teams in the draft or in the NFL were more apt to build their team through veterans and just trade all their draft picks away. Like George Allen, Washington's coach at the time, he was notorious for trading all of his draft picks away. You remember the Steelers from the 60s, or maybe you don't remember that, but you're aware that the Buddy Parker, those coaches, they could have cared less about draft picks. They traded so many of them away for veterans that were kind of on their way out, or just named people at that point that had nothing left. Bouncing back to 74, the Oilers, the 1974 Oilers, they finished 1-13 in both 73 and 74. But in 1974, they decided, this is before the draft, they decided to trade their first round pick and their third round pick to the Cowboys for just a couple of average players. One was a wide receiver. The other one was Bubba Smith's brother, the famous Bubba Smith. Just average players. And obviously the Oilers being so bad, they didn't realize it at the time, but they had the number one overall pick. So they lost out on the number one overall pick. The Cowboys, who were a perennial contender, they had just won the Super Bowl in 71, and all of a sudden they had the number one pick in the draft in 1974, and they used it to pick Ed Too Tall Jones. That's how you stay on top. They kind of took advantage of the time. They were a lot like the Steelers, the Cowboys. They once Chuck Knoll came here in 69, he decided, look, we're not going to get rid of these draft picks anymore. We're going to build from the ground up. When you're getting these veterans from other teams. Basically, you're getting other teams' problems. We're not going to do that anymore. We're gonna bring these young football players in, and we're gonna teach them how to play the way we want them to play. So the Cowboys and the Steelers, in a lot of ways, were alike, and the Cowboys were really innovative when it came to evaluating the prospects. They were the first really to utilize computers and data and numbers. You know, they were kind of like pioneers in that regard. And of course, the Steelers were pioneers with Bill Nunn, the legendary scout, who was kind of an entree into Southern small black colleges, and that's how they acquired so many legendary players like Mel Blunt, John Stallworth, Donnie Shell, Mean Joe, L.C. Greenwood. I mean, the list goes on and on. I can sit here all day and name players. Ernie Holmes. Basically back then you had kind of a weird dynamic in the NFL where so many teams were they believed in building with veterans like the Dolphins in the early 70s, who, I mean, they were an expansion team in the late 60s. And I just assumed that they built those great teams through the draft, young players, but only 27 players from their Super Bowl teams were draft picks, were original draft picks of theirs. So that's pretty interesting that teams felt that way. And you had teams that felt that way, who were just giving away draft picks. And then you had teams like the Steelers and the Cowboys and even the Raiders, who really valued the draft. So that was pretty interesting. And of course, they went into the thing with how conflicted Pittsburgh was. Should they draft Lynn Swann, the big school, the big name receiver in the first round, or John Stallworth, the unknown player from the small school in the South, Alabama A&M, I believe. They took Swan and thanks to some shenanigans on Pittsburgh's part where they wouldn't let anybody see the Stallworth's workout film, he lasted to the fourth round. They got him, and of course there were five, now six, with Donnie Shell. I guess this production was produced before Donnie Shell was elected to the Hall of Fame. But, you know, there were six players, including Shell, in that draft, that NFL draft, the 74 draft, and five of them were Steelers. So it's pretty amazing. And, you know, it talked, you know, if you watch some others, like the 94 draft, that was famous for the Mel Kiper, Bill Tobin clash. You know, who the hell is Mel Kiper? A lot of people said it online today. I think Bill Tobin was like the first person to say that publicly. Because Mel Kiper, you know, the Colts were in a bad way back then. They were always drafting in the top five, top 10 every year. And he was adamant that they needed a franchise quarterback. And the two guys that were at the top of the list that year were Heath Schuler and Trent Dilfer. And instead of that, they drafted Marshall Faulk, which I think they had the third pick in that draft, or the second pick. And he was like, how could you do that? They need a franchise quarterback. And of course, he was wrong about that. Marshall Faulk's in the Hall of Fame. And then I think they had the fifth pick. Yeah, they had the fifth pick. And Heath Schuler was already gone by then. And Trent Dilfer was still there. But instead of that, they picked Trev Alberts. And he was like, this is why they're always drafting so high every year. He was adamant that they made a mistake. And then they interviewed Bill Tobin. Chris Mortensen interviewed him, and that's when who the hell's Mel Kiper? He sits over there in Baltimore. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Who is he to tell us who we're supposed to pick? He's an outsider. Well, it turned out they were both wrong, because Trev Alberts he had a nothing career. He was just enough. I think he injured, whatever. I think he lasted 3 years before his career was over. Trent Dilfer was an okay quarterback. You know, he had a nice career. He made a Pro Bowl. Obviously, he helped the 2000 Ravens win the Super Bowl. When I say helped in quotation marks, because I think Cliff Stout might have been able to quarterback that team to a Super Bowl. That's how good that defense was. But he certainly wasn't worthy of a top five pick. That's for sure. So these guys are just going at it. I don't even know if they've ever patched things up. I don't even know if they talked today, Bill Tobin and Mel Kiper. But they were publicly feuding, fighting over these players, and they were both wrong. And I think that's a nice lesson for all of us to learn today. And that's, you know, like we spent all these months like fighting with each other, And you know, your picks are garbage. No, your picks are garbage. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. I had this guy 12th on my board. How can you say he's not a, you know? And then you look back 5 years later, and those players you were arguing about had maybe okay careers. Some of them were absolute busts. So that was a pretty interesting one. And of course, I'll just, you know, touch on one more, and that's the combine and how one player, Mike Mamula, in 1995, he was at Boston College. Back then, they called him an outside linebacker / defensive end, whereas today that would be known as an edge. Somebody who's kind of too small to be a defensive end in certain formations, but you know, in other formations, an outside linebacker, he's an edge. Like in some formations, he would be a defensive end, a lighter defensive end, and the 3-4, he'd be an outside linebacker. That was Mike Mamula, and he was basically projected to be a third, fourth, fifth round pick, but he trained specifically for the drills in the combine. He hired trainers. He trained for months to get prepared for this because he knew people, you know, put a lot of weight in these results, and he killed it. He had like a 4.58 40 time. He bench pressed like 26 times. I mean, it was crazy, and he went from being a mid round pick, to being the seventh pick overall by the Eagles, who traded up out of the 12th spot to get him, and. He was basically an average player. He had a nice enough career, but certainly wasn't worthy of the seventh overall pick. And the Eagles passed on Warren Sapp, first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, like Tony Dungy described him, this is Joe Green you're passing on. You know, yeah, the Jets passed on him because there were these rumors that surfaced at the 11th hour about failed drug tests, wherever they came from, I don't know, but. So many teams passed on Warren Sapp, including the Jets, and their fans were famously, you know, beside themselves. That famous, like the one guy is like covering his face, like he just found out his house burned to the ground, you know. But they were right. They were right. You passed on Warren Sapp to get Kyle Brady, who was an okay tight end, but certainly wasn't, you know, a generational talent. And the Buccaneers wound up with both Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks in that draft. It was amazing. It was amazing that they got both of those players. And those guys, along with Simeon Rice, John Lynch, Rondé Barber, I mean, they went on to help them rebuild their franchise and win a Super Bowl ultimately. So it's amazing, you know, some drafts, you know, yield you nothing. Others change your entire franchise. It's such a, as we always say, a total crapshoot. So. You can find those episodes on YouTube. And if you're into the draft, which I know a lot of you are, I think you'll find those pretty interesting. They're like 45 minutes long. It's just great stuff. Just great stuff. Like this, you know, like the 85 draft, how close the 49ers came to making a trade with the Bengals to move up three spots to trade to draft Eddie Brown instead of Jerry Rice. Although I think they still would have drafted Jerry Rice. I think Bill Walsh was, I think he just loved him. He loved Jerry Rice, and he wasn't going to – but at the time, Eddie Brown, Jerry Rice, and Al Toon were considered, like, interchangeable, like the running backs of today coming into this draft. Like, you know, you can't distinguish one from the other, and yet Jerry Rice is arguably the greatest football player who ever lived. So, and Eddie Brown was an okay receiver. Al Toon was pretty good, but they certainly weren't Jerry Rice. So you just never know. But check those out if you ever have a chance. And those are my topics for tonight. Now I will take some questions before I say goodnight. And here's a comment from Cree X. And she says, first round, second round, I want them to be starters, whoever they pick. Well, that's the idea. I mean, that's when you're picking in the first and second round, you're looking for starters, if not right away, certainly sooner rather than later. You want those guys to start. And here's one from Eric Pereira, and he asks, what if Javonte Williams is the only available running back left at 24? Do you take him, yes or no? That's a great question. That is a great question. And it all depends. I don't want to be a cop-out, but it all depends. Who else is there? Is Creed Humphrey there, the center? What if he's there when he probably will be there? and you know they need a center just like they need a running back. What do you do there? What if there's a stud tackle that slides like David DeCastro? He is a guard, but he slid to 24. Nobody expected him to be there. Like, what if it's the one from Virginia Tech? Was it Darishaw? What if he's there? I mean, it's I don't know. I might have to go with the tackle. You know, the quote unquote draft value at that point. But I mean, if you feel like you can get a really good tackle in the second round, maybe, or the third round, because it's a lot deeper than running back, maybe you take Javonte Williams. You know, we'll see. But it's a great question. I mean, and we're going to find out in a couple weeks, less than 2 weeks. And here's one from Ryan O'Toole. And he asks, Tony, do you see Big Al returning, or will they decide that after the draft? That was one of Jeff's questions, right? Yeah, it's one of his six packs. I don't see him returning before the draft, no. I think if they do bring him back, they're gonna wait till after the draft, because I think, you know, they went out and they signed Joe Haig, who can possibly start for them if need be, if Zach Banner or Shooks don't improve. But then again, you know, maybe they draft somebody. You know, if they draft somebody, then I don't see him coming back. But I think if they do make a decision on him, I think it'll be after the draft. Although I've been surprised before. I didn't expect Vince Williams to be back, and here he is. I didn't expect Tyson Alulu to be back, and here he is. I didn't expect Juju to be back, and here he is. So it might happen tomorrow, for all I know. And what else we have here? Here's one from Kenneth McNair about Javonte Williams, about the Eric Pereira question. He says, yeah, I'd say yes, draft him. That's Eric. That's like Kenneth McNair. So there you go. There's so many possibilities. And like I keep saying, this draft is so intriguing because, like, in our minds, some of these positions are needs. Like I just mentioned tackle. You know, as far as a lot of us are concerned, that's a need. I certainly think it might be. But we don't know how they feel about Zach Banner. They signed him to a pretty decent deal. If he plays the next 2 years, it'll be worth $9 million. That's a lot of money to pay somebody that you don't believe in. So they might like him a lot. They you know, Joe Haig, they might really like him and the versatility he brings. And they might love Shooks, you know, and we're thinking, oh, they have to draft a tackle in the first round. And they might be thinking, we could wait to the third or fourth round. Cornerback's another one. You know, we're thinking maybe they need to draft one early, but they might absolutely love James Pierre. I know Jeffrey Benedict loves James Pierre. If there's two or three people in that organization that feel the same way, maybe they feel he could be their starter in 2021 on the outside. You know, so you just never know what they're thinking. We could talk until we're blue in the face about what we think, and we can look at all these mock drafts and the big board and everything under the sun. But I mean, you know, we're never going to know what they think. And even when they say stuff, you know, you don't know if you should believe it or not. That's just, there's just so many things that, you know, teams are always trying to throw other teams off their scent and what they're trying to do. So that's why people find it intriguing, you know, the draft, because it is such a crapshoot. If it was more predictable, I don't think it would be as much fun. You know, if we didn't sit here for months and argue about it, and I know I just said, you know, learn from Bill Tobin and Mel Kiper. I know I said that, but it's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to learn from that. But if we didn't get to sit here and argue about it for months, it wouldn't be as much fun. You know, if it was so predictable, I wouldn't have just told you about seven shows to watch about previous drafts, right? Seven NFL films productions to watch, because it is such a fascinating thing. You know, like here's some names that from the 85 draft: Steve Calabria, Frank Reich. Remember Frank Reich? Obviously, Randall Cunningham. He's a legend. Steve Bono. These guys were part of the quarterback class from 1985. This is 1 year after Marino set the world on fire with 48 touchdowns. He set a record, right? And what do you have, 5,000 yards too for the Dolphins? So a lot of people were looking for the next Dan Marino, but they, you know, they weren't looking like they do now. I mean, people recognize how important quarterbacks were, but I don't think they were trying to build them up like they do today. Like if these guys were in this year's draft, some of them would probably be first round picks, because that's how much importance is placed on quarterbacks now, even compared to 1985 when it was still really important. I think Randall was the first guy picked. And to be fair, Bernie Kosar was really a part of that class, but he went in a supplemental draft to Cleveland because he basically didn't want to play for the Vikings. I think a lot of players didn't want to play for them back then because they were cheap and there wasn't a free agency. So you basically were attached to a team forever until they decided to get rid of you. But that's how it worked back then. So he was in the supplemental draft and he went to the Browns. And Doug Flutie would have been in that draft, but he went to the USFL. So you probably would have had some quarterbacks picked in the first round, but none got picked in the first round that year. Randall Cunningham went in the second. And Frank Reich and Bono and those guys, they went like in the middle of the round. Calabria was a ninth round pick. You know, he was from Colgate, you know, thought he had the size and the arm to be the next Marino. Never happened. So it's pretty interesting. And here's Dave Shipley, legendary Dave Shipley. And he's late. He says, "I'm late. What's up, BTSC family?" Welcome, Dave. Let's see what else we have here before I call it a night. Live chat's kind of acting slow, but that's okay. Here's another one from Eric Pereira, and he says, if I can get it up here, is he a fifth round pick? Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know how Steelers drafts are, right? I mean, we always go into every draft talking about needs they have to fill, or fill. I hate that word because you don't really fill any need, at least not right away. It takes time before you really realize if you filled a need, address a need. We always say they have to address this position, that position, that position, that position. And then maybe they do in the first round, but then by the second round, they're drafting somebody like, why are they drafting another receiver? Why are they drafting an edge? What's going on here? You know, so you know, I don't know. If it were up to me, I'd say you address, you know, not in this order, but running back, O-line, tight end, center, cornerback, you know, but they might go out and pick an edge for all we know. Not in the first round. I don't think it's going to happen, but in the second, third round, you know. And it's funny. You want to know how valuable pass rushers are in the NFL, and we talk about quarterbacks, but I was writing down, you know, specific team needs. Each team, I was, you know, in preparation for our draft on Monday, the one with the writers we're going to do on the Hangover on Monday. And I swear, like 24 of the 32 teams, one of the needs was edge. I just showed you how valuable edge pass rushers are, you know, the outside pass rushers. So, you know, quarterbacks are valuable, receivers, running backs, but I think, you know, like a scout said a number of years ago, or an executive, you paid a quarterback, you paid a guy who rushes the quarterback. That's number two, you know. So pass rushers are so valuable, and teams are always looking for them. And as much as I don't think they need to do it, because I like Alex Highsmith, it wouldn't shock me if Pittsburgh drafted an edge rusher, meaning an outside linebacker for them and their scheme, in the second, third round. It wouldn't shock me at all. So on that happy note, I think I will call it a night. It was a fun show. Sorry about the technical difficulties in the beginning. It was my mistake. I'm only human, as the song goes. I don't know who sang it, but it's from the 80s. Brian would know that. And sure enough, Cree reminds me that I'm freezing up. I don't know what's going on tonight, but sorry about that. But those things happen when you're on the internet live. And here's one from Russ Obenstein. He asks, what time is Monday's draft? And just to just to be be clear, this isn't the community live chat mock draft. That's the following week. This is the one with the writers like Michael Beck, Brian, me, one of the guys from Touchdown Under. You know, not this isn't the community draft, but it'll be around 8 o'clock. That's usually when the hangover comes on. You know, so roughly 8 o'clock. So please stay tuned. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm sure one of us, me, will make some picks of people like, what the heck? This guy doesn't do his homework. I have been doing my homework, but it's just not as long as all the other people. So I might have some puzzling picks. So please stay tuned for that. And I'll take one more from Ryan O'Toole since he was nice enough to ask. I probably don't even know this one, but he asked, what changes are you expecting with Canada running the show other than not being predictable? Well, a lot more motion, like you saw last year when he was more of an influence on the offense earlier in the year, a lot of that kind of stuff. Other than that, I'm not the guy to answer those questions. Jeffrey Benedict might be able to answer that. He's a really good expert when it comes to that kind of stuff. As far as, but you know, I'm sure he's going to emphasize running the ball more. As far as predictability, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say that too quickly because it doesn't take long for fans to start accusing coordinators of being predictable. You know, that's just the nature of the job. So I expect him to do implement a lot more motion offense into his game plans because that's what he specializes in. That's what he kind of I don't know why they went away from that last year other than maybe Ben wasn't comfortable with it or the line wasn't up to snuff. I don't know. But I expect at least that, a lot more motion offense. So other than that, I don't know. Tune in on Wednesday nights to the curtain call. Ask Jeffrey Benedict. He really knows his stuff. He'll be able to help you answer that question. So on that note, I'm going to say good night. You guys have a great night. Excuse me. You're always awesome. And I will talk to you on Monday on The Hangover with Brian and the gang. You guys have a great weekend and go Steelers.